This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. And it is not February 19th. No, it is the 26th, 2020. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show and are listening live, you can call us right now at 860-486-9487. Or you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. If you're listening to this on podcast, you can send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com, or you can visit and comment at Bicycle Talk on Facebook. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, or now on Spotify. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. Ron's rant of the week. Okay, this one's a little interesting. I know that they're probably out there. I know there's probably places around that actually offer this. But what's with bikes in parking garages? Why aren't there secure places in parking garages so that you can, you know, put your bike in there? You charge for parking garages, charge cars to park their car. I know mine is sitting in a parking garage right now. And they give you a fee for leaving your car in the garage. Wouldn't it be nice if they would just section off, and I'm not talking about a lot of space because less people ride bicycles than drive cars, but wouldn't it be nice if they sectioned off an area that was safe for your bike to be left there? And, you know, maybe if they were really good and they were really environmentally friendly and really wanted to do a good thing for the earth, it would be free to put your bike in the parking garage. And that would be a really good move in the right direction, because then you're encouraging more use of bicycles and less use of motorized vehicles, and that would be a good thing. But why don't parking garages have a safe space for you to park your bike? Ah, the Netherlands. Oh, I forgot all about the Netherlands. So I've got a little thing here that I found from the Netherlands, and it is the world's biggest bike parking garage holds 12,500 bicycles. Just to give you an idea of, you know, what the rest of the world is like. By the way, isn't it the Netherlands that has the most, isn't that like one of the nicest places to live in the world? Or one of the people where people are like the happiest and they've got all sorts of, I believe that's true. So the Netherlands, there are 1.3 bikes per person. So finding a parking space for a two-wheeler can be daunting. So to amend the situation, the country...
That means that many people have more than one bike.
That is correct.
Yeah.
That's
this is
correct.
1.3
yeah.
Per person.
Per person,
yeah.
Right. So that means that little baby who was born, you know, 18 weeks ago has 1.3 bicycles. So
right.
That's per person. So obviously, maybe they're not all riding them, but that the point is that they have a lot of bicycles in the Netherlands.
That's amazing.
So to amend the situation, the country is building a massive three-story bike parking garage beneath Utrecht's central train station. The first phase of the project will be able to hold 6,000 bikes, and then another 6,500 spots will be added by the end of, this is an old story, by the end of 2018. So this exists right now. Once constructed, it's going to be 184,000 square foot space, and it will be it's the world's largest, taking the title from the 9,400 spot in underground station in Tokyo. So Tokyo has a bike parking space for 9,400 bicycles. So, hey, how about that, you know? So I'm going to just shout out to, what do we have, like Laz Parking, I think is what we have here on campus. Laz Parking, you want to do a really great public service? Why don't you offer, like, take two of your spaces in your car parking garage and turn them into bicycle parking? And, you know, the best place to do it would be to have it within sight of the booth where the cars go in and out. So, you know, there's always someone kind of looking at the bikes so that nothing, no hanky-panky can happen on your bicycles. But what a wonderful idea. Actually, I'm going to talk to my friends at Bike Mansfield about that and see if Corey and I can strike up a conversation with the folks at Laz Parking, because it would be such a great thing for them to do, and it would be a really, really, really good public service, and, you know, it would make them look good. It would be a good thing. So anyway, yeah, bicycle parking in parking garages. It's safe. It's dry. It's not, your bikes aren't in the weather. It's a good thing. It's all a good thing. So anyway, that's my rant of the week. Why aren't there any bicycle parking spots in parking garages? Boy, it sure would be nice. Anyway, moving on. The Netherlands obviously paid attention. On a positive side, a big shout out to Jed Kornbluh and CCAP for the bike swap last weekend. Sold out. There was not any room left in that building when I walked into that building. And it was just a great event. I was there, and a number of other people were there. Actually, a lot of my friends in the bicycle world were there. So it also kind of became this giant schmooze fest, which was also very good, you know. And Fran's nodding and smiling because she knows how much I like schmooze fests. So yes, that was good. And people were all asking for you also. So see that?
We also coined the term schmoozertunity.
It was a schmoozertunity. Yes, it was. Very good. Very good. So it was a great event, and I believe that Jed will be coming to see us next week. So that's what we're looking at right now. Tentatively, we'll have Jed on, and we can get a recap of what's going on with the CCAP. What a great organization. And this, of course, was a partial fundraiser for that, too, which was really, really nice. So anyway, big shout out. Great event. Bike swaps are kind of cool because there's some people that are there that have new products that they're, quote unquote, swapping. And then there are others. You know, the guy who was right next to me, JD, he has a lot of old stuff. He's got a lot of, you know, just kind of, I think on, when you go on to places like, you know, the sale places that, you know, that are selling in auction places and all, they call it, vintage cycling equipment. I have a lot of vintage cycling equipment. I still ride my vintage cycling equipment, thank you. It works just fine. But anyway, there were all different types of things there. There were parts, there were frames, there were bikes, there were, you know, there was clothing, there were accessories, all sorts of interesting different things. So it was kind of a cool thing. So I liked it. I had a good time with it. And it reminds me that there is also another bike swap coming up very soon. And I forgot to bring my information with me, but I will find it. And that is in Wethersfield. And that will be coming up very soon. Actually, Fran, you might be able to look that up. The Wethersfield bike swap, if you could check that on the date on that one, too. So that is also coming up. And that's I think that's at Wethersfield High School. It's a project that is done out of the high school itself. So that's kind of a cool thing. So it's that kind of that time of year where these things are popping up all around. It's a lot of fun. And anyway, it's a cool thing. The Maintenance Minute. Bicycle repair stands. Should you own one? Well, there is, if you are the type of person that likes to work on your bicycle or likes to clean your bicycle after you ride your bike and you need a good sturdy place to do it or something that's convenient at least, a bicycle repair stand is kind of a cool idea. So there's all types of bicycle repair stands out there. And of course, you know, which one is the best one? It's the one that you can afford and the one that you'll use. That's basically the way that works. And, you know, some of them can get a little pricey. It can happen. So you gotta, you know, kind of pick and choose. But, you know, if you want to repair your bike, it does have an advantage. You can save some time, no trips back and forth to the bike shop. You get to learn the inner workings of your personal bicycle, which is really, really cool. Now, there is a point where this does not work. An old friend of mine used to have a wonderful saying, and that was, you know, because I'd say, well, you know, you could do that yourself. And he would look at me and smile, and he was not a mechanically or otherwise a comfortable person when it came to doing basic things, even around the house. And his saying was, when in doubt, hire out. So he used that. That's a shout out to, I'm gonna mention, that's a shout out to David Evans, an old radio guy, who told me that one many years ago. I always thought that was a funny thing. When in doubt, hire out. So if you're comfortable with doing this sort of thing, it's great. But remember, you can get yourself in a lot of trouble if you have a little knowledge but not enough knowledge to get yourself through. And I will always, always, always promote the local bike shop. Yeah, your local bike shop is always your, they are the lifeblood of cycling and keeping your bike alive and keeping it happy. And there are so many times where people will say, you know, I usually do a lot of my own service, but then I went to the local bike shop and I just dropped it off there to have a couple things done. My bike's never run this well before. It's never run like this before. So, you know, they know what they're doing. That's why they're there. So never doubt the local bike shop. But if you're looking for different types of bike stands, there are a number of them that are out there. Park Tool Company makes a lot of repair stands. Feedback Sports makes a really nice repair stand. That's my particular favorite. I own one of those. There's Topeak. There's a bunch of different ones out there. And, you know, you can do that. You do have to, you know, bring your checkbook with you because it is definitely a pricey thing. And, you know, it depends on what you're looking for. Clamp-style stands hold the bike by the seat post, seat tube, or any other tube, which lets you configure your bike in a position that's most convenient for what you're working on. But be aware that clamps can easily damage carbon or lightweight aluminum tubes if tightened too hard. So we gotta, when I use my clamp stand, I clamp the seat post. I don't touch the frame with it because the tubing has become far too fragile for that sort of thing. So then there's also the Euro style or race stand that holds the bike at the bottom bracket and the front or rear dropout. So you would you'd be taking the front wheel off and you'd be clamping the dropout right into it, and then it's stabilized right by the dropout area, by the bottom bracket area. So that's something that is a great option for aero or other bikes with funky tube shapes. If your bike has through axles, however, make sure your stand comes with the appropriate adapter. So that's another thing. So what kind of a wrench are you? If you're a home mechanic and you want basic repairs and maintenance and have no intentions of setting up a permanent workshop, you should consider maybe one of the portable models. I have a portable model. I also have a Sirius Pro stand that, because I'm that guy. I've got one. I actually did a really cool thing with my bike stand down in the garage because, you know, I'm always like, it's always kind of in the way. It drove me a little nuts. So I flipped it upside down, and I've got an old Park PRS-1, nice professional stand. I attached it to the ceiling in the garage. I bolted it right into the rafter in the garage. So it's coming down, and it just stays out of the way. It's really easy. If I need to really make a little extra room, I'll just pull the claw out. It's really kind of a cool thing. And it also put it up a little bit higher, which is, makes it a lot easier for me to work on my bike. So because the old PRS-1 had a short support on it, which was not as tall as I like to have them. So it's kind of cool. So you can mess around with that. But then again, you can also, if you go perusing onto the good old internet, what did we do without Professor Google? Oh my goodness. You can look up homemade bicycle stands, bike stands. And what you're going to find is there's a number of people that have a number of ideas and things that they've used to fabricate portable bicycle stands or plain old, you know, permanent bicycle stands. In their garages or in their work areas or whatever. And there's a lot of interesting designs here. Some of them I look at and I kind of chuckle, but you know what? If it works, then that's just great. But there are a number of things that you can do, and you can keep the price tag down, and you can have a bike repair stand that you can work with. And then don't forget the good old, and this was my Florida stand when Fran and I were down in Florida. Do not forget about the old the rope stand, which is very simply just a piece of rope that loops around something up high that you can hang the bike from, and then you just put it over the seat, and then the bike is elevated and you can work on it. And it's not perfect because it certainly is not very sturdy. Your bike is kind of moving around a bit. But you can do a lot of different things, and you can make it work for you. So there are a ton of different ideas out there. And depending on, once again, what it is that you need and what will work for your needs. So anyway, a bike stand, that's my mechanical minute, which is always longer than a minute, but it's kind of a cool thing. If you get really, really, really desperate, oh, this is really funny. This person had he has a rack on the back of his bicycle, and he made an ad hoc bike stand using a doorknob and a bike rack. So the bike rack's on the back of the bike. He hooked the bike rack over the doorknob, and voila, bike is in the air, and you can work on your bike. I wouldn't recommend that one, but it is clever, and it is it's kind of funny, actually. So there's a lot of different things you can do that can make it it useful so that you can work on your bike at home. And if it's nothing else, it's just to be able to, to be able to wash the bike down, to be able to pull the wheels off and clean around things, and maybe, you know, install a cable now and then, wrap some handlebar tape. It's really nice to have a good sturdy bike stand. I really like it. So anyway, that is where we're at today as far as bicycle stands go. The next thing I wanted to bring up, someone brought this to my attention, which I thought was really kind of cool, and it's Bike Cops for Kids. And I was told, you know, you need to look this up, this Bike Cops for Kids. And this is in Minneapolis, good old Minneapolis, the bike capital of the U.S. right now.
Go Amy Klobuchar.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. She's from Minneapolis, isn't she?
She's from Minnesota anyway.
Well, Minnesota. Right, right. So anyway, they started this Bike Cops for Kids, I think about 10 years ago is what it's been going on for. So it's kind of a neat thing, and yeah, it's this is actually honoring a person by the name of Kirchwin, is that his last name? Kirchin. And Officer Kirchin has been riding with the Minneapolis Police Department's Bike Cops for Kids program for 10 years. Just being on a bike is a great way to get into community and get to know people, he said. Kirchin pedals his bike around North Minneapolis, engages with kids, and lets them know they're safe and that cops care. So it's just a neat thing to have cops on bikes in the first place. But then they do all sorts of other interesting things too, and they have come up with they actually got presented a check for $25,000 and 200 brand new kids bikes. And so, they were able to distribute bikes around the city to those who needed bikes, which is really a cool thing. You know, Minneapolis is on top of it. They got some stuff going on. Now, we've also got some stuff going on around here in Connecticut, too. We've got programs in Hartford. We got programs in New Haven. I hear there's something going on in New London. Anybody who knows about New London, get a hold of me, because I hear there's like a major movement going on down New London, and I should be in tune to it. So lots of stuff going on, but I thought this was a neat thing, and I should mention it because someone had mentioned to me, and they said, you got to talk a little bit about these guys. So if there's anyone out there who's listening who is a member of or knows a connection to Bike Cops for Kids, I would love to talk to them about this. So pretty cool thing. This police officer is getting national recognition for his work in the community. His name's Officer Mike Kirchen, and he is the co-founder of Bike Cops for Kids. And he was featured on the Facebook Watch show called Returning the Favor, hosted by Mike Rowe, the program which aired last Monday night. Well, this is a little ancient, so it was last month, was called Returning the Favor, a Bicycle Built for Blue. Isn't that clever? It's kind of a cool thing. So anyway, big shout out to these guys. That's awesome. Awesome. Doing a good thing. I am also looking for, if there is anyone out in the listening audience that is a bike cop that has spent time on a bicycle working in the urban areas and uses bicycling for policing, I would love to get together and do a show with you.
Why don't you see if you could get hold of this Mike Kirchen?
I'll see if I can get a hold of him.
Yeah.
I'll see. Yeah. Yeah. I'll reach out to him and see what he has to say, because it's just a really... It's such a great thing to do. I remember running into a couple of bicycle cops in a bicycle shop in Farmington many years ago, and they were in there getting their bike serviced, and I think that they were actually not from Farmington. They might have been actually from East Hartford, or I can't remember. But anyway, they were in there getting their bike serviced because that's the shop they had the contract with. So they were getting their bike serviced, and they were all in their, you know, uniforms and all. And of course, their dress is a little bit different. They wear shorts, but they wear special shorts with lots of cargo pockets. A very, 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 very interesting uniform, because it's very useful if you ride a bike. So you're not like dumping things all over the sidewalk when you're pedaling the bike down the street. They're very functional. They're very, very well ventilated, because, you know, you're going to work up a bit of steam when you're riding on a bicycle. And then they have special racks on the bikes and holders for, you know, carrying their equipment with them and all that too. So it's pretty neat. But their opinion was, after doing this for a while, after getting out of the squad car, they said that they were just so much more accepted into the world when they're on their bicycles, because they're a little bit more vulnerable, which is good and bad. I think it's good, because it humanizes the job, and the job is a very much a human job. But when you get behind the darkened windshields of these big cruisers, it just changes things. It changes the presentation. But when they said when they got out and they got on the streets, they said it got to know a lot more people. They said people were much more receptive and friendly to them. They said that their cuff and collar went up almost 30% over using a squad car, which I thought was really interesting. I asked them why, and they said, because they can't get away from us. When they run away, we can chase them down. And he said, when we're in a squad car, he said, all they have to do is run down a little alley, and they're gone, and we'll never see them again. So they said, but when you're on a bicycle, you got a better chance of getting a hold of people. Plus, they also had a better chance of actually seeing an active crime and being able to handle it correctly.
Just like, so, I'm more likely to see an active snake or turtle in the road.
Yes, right, right.
Did you know that there's an International Police Mountain Bike Association?
Yes, I do know about that, actually.
Okay.
I do, yeah. My old friend Kevin Moran was involved with that many, many years ago, back
nice.
In the Fuji bicycle days, yeah. Because Kevin put the first... bicycles under cops in New York City many, many years ago.
It's got, their website has all these things that I think you just said all of these things, that bikes are less threatening than patrol vehicles, other bicyclists are more accepting of bike patrol officers, bicycle patrols result in more than twice as many contacts with the public than vehicle patrols, bicycle police security uniforms help officers to quickly transition from the traditional law enforcement duties to more service-oriented work. Perpetrators don't notice bike patrols, so if you're doing a bad thing, they can sneak up on you.
You're right. They're quiet.
So don't do bad things.
Right. You can't. You can see that cruiser coming, but you can't see the person on the bicycle.
Bike patrols can go where traditional patrol vehicles can't, especially if you had become a bicycle.
Yep.
You'd be riding up, you'd be doing parkour on the bike.
Yeah.
Bicycle officers can use all of their senses to detect illegal activity. Cycles have other uses.
Right.
Bicycles cost much less to purchase and maintain than traditional patrol cars, and they provide environmental and health benefits.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. And you know where they're really, really useful is on university campuses. That's a shout out to anyone who may be listening here from the university that maybe you should incorporate a few more bicycles into your patrols, because right now I see a lot of SUVs.
And they're big.
They are big. They consume a lot of fuel. They're very expensive. They're the whole outlay on that vehicle is very, very high, and you could buy a lot of bicycles for the same amount of money.
Yeah.
And you're also contributing to the fitness and well-being of your personnel.
So you had asked about the Weathersfield Bicycle Show and swap meet.
Yes, I did. Did you find something on that?
I did.
Okay.
Yes. The 7th Annual Weathersfield, Connecticut Bicycle Festival Show and Swap Meet will be on Sunday, June 14th, 2020, from 8 a.m. to 12:30 p.m., at 51 Francis Street in Weathersfield. We will not be there.
Right. We're going to be somewhere else, aren't we?
Hudson Valley.
Yeah, it is the Hudson Valley. Oh, that's too bad. That's okay. I'm going to probably do something with him. He has a podcast called Bike Karma.
Oh.
And we talked about getting together and doing mutual shows. So he'll come on this show, and then I'll go on his show, and we're going to do a little podcasting together.
There needs to be a counterpoint show called Carbikema.
Carbikema. Oh, God. You said it.
I did.
You did.
Yeah.
You did. You did. Mm-hmm. Ah, speaking of sites and websites and podcasts, there's another one that I was turned on to recently, and it's probably like, gosh, Ron, how could you not have known about that? There's a great one called The War on Cars. You say it most of the time. I hear a lot of that. So it's called The War on Cars. And
sounds like just up your alley.
It is, and it's live. It's actually in Denver, Colorado, is where it is based out of. That's not true. That's not true. This particular episode, the first live episode, was in Denver, Colorado. And it was the Mile High City's battle against automobile dominance. And from the announcement that the Denver Department of Transportation infrastructure will install 125 miles of bike lanes by 2023, go Denver, to the recent closure of B-Cycle, the city's bike sharing program. It's been a year of good news and bad for Denverites. That's what you are. You're a Denverite. So anywhere, there are these podcasts that they are producing. Another one here, which was on February 5th, called Suburbans in the City. And the Chevrolet Suburban is one of General Motors' most enduring triumphs. That's very funny. Okay, so it talks about that. And then on the 17th of January, they had one called The Department of Bike Land Security. So that will be interesting. Anyway, I just started listening to these because I find them very interesting. And so if you're interested in knowing a little bit more about it, it's called The War on Cars. They even have a T-shirt. So they have a lot of different things in here. So anyway, if you get a chance, listen to them. It's there's one on December 10th, which I just started listening to, and I got to continue. Kara Swisher says, car ownership is finished. So there's a lot of things that are, like you said, Fran, right up my alley. And it's a movement. I can see it coming. I reported on this a couple of weeks ago. We talked something about by 2023, there's going to be a 20% increase in bicycle usage in major cities. There's a lot going on, and it's really going to be a good thing. So anyway, check them out. It's called The War on Cars. I thought I would shout out to them because I think they're really cool, and they've got some pretty neat stuff going on. They got a fun website here, too, that you can go to, and that would be waroncars.org. So check them out and see what you think of The War on Cars. Leave a comment to me on Facebook, on Bicycle Talk, and see what you think. So anyway, I thought it was kind of cool passing that on, a little bit of information. Okay, now here's one that you don't know about, Fran. Do you know what? the UAE tour is?
Does it have something to do with the United Arab Emirates?
Yes, it does.
Oh, all right.
There is a bicycle race there from the 23rd of February through the 29th of February.
Oh, that's a good time.
And it's it is one of those early season pro races that, you know, they start, people kind of get out there and you'll see some names that you know and a lot of names that you don't, but it's early season racing. And anyway, it's happening right now and they are racing in the desert. Yeah. Yes. It doesn't sound like a really great time to me, but, you know, it's what it is. And Adam Yates is currently leading in this particular race. So a name that we have heard from the past. And I believe that, the other thing was Mr. Froome is back. So Chris Froome is back.
Wow.
Also.
So he recovered from his crash up.
Yeah. I think this actually came out of Velo News. Yes. Emotional Froome happy to have the elbows out again. That's funny. Chris Froome spoke to the reporters after stage one of the UAE tour and said that he was overjoyed to be back in the pro peloton after 8 months away. 8 months on the sidelines, and Chris Froome is back. 34-year-old finished safely in Sunday's opening stage of the UAE tour, racing for the first time since that serious crash that ended his 2019 season and could have ended his career. His quote is, to be in a bike race, racing at the World Tour level, it's a huge victory in and of itself, Froome told reporters after the stage with a touch of emotion in his voice. It felt good to have a race number on and have the elbows out again, fighting for position in the bunch. It feels good to be a bike racer again. And boy, nobody has their elbows out as much as Chris Froome does. Maybe that's why he does it. Nobody gets near him. It's safer.
He has long, stringy arms.
He is a long, stringy guy.
And his elbows stick out.
He is a long, stringy guy. That's what it is. So he's just he rides and I am not the only one that talks about this, but he rides in a style I would call awkward, because he just doesn't look comfortable on his bike. Yet that man can move a bike. Oh my God, he can move a bike. And when he gets out of the saddle, climbing out of the saddle, he climbs at 90 RPMs out of the saddle. Try that someday. See what that's like. Try it for, 3 seconds, because that's about all you're going to last when
big
you do it.
Big strength to weight ratio.
A really big strength to weight ratio. I cannot maintain 90 RPMs out of the saddle anymore. That's although I still can get closer, but my strength to weight ratio is also fairly good as far as that goes. Unfortunately, the rest of me is not that talented, so therefore I just ride my bike. But anyway, bike racing was fun. I spent 10 years at it. It was a good time. And you find your strengths and your weaknesses. And my strengths, of course, were in road races, which there are very few of, unfortunately, and also in cyclocross, which is definitely a place which is a lot more fun for me. So anyway, Froome's back, and he is happy to be back and happy to be out there again. He was pretty damaged, as I remember, from that crash. He had multiple fractures in his leg. I can't remember exactly, but it seemed like he was really in a rough place. So anyway, Chris Froome is back. Yay, big shout out for Chris Froome. We'll see where he's going. So he says here, it's nothing to write home about, but it's a big victory for me already. Just being on the start line and having got through the day in a bunch with no issues, he said. It has 2-3 months. It was 2 to 3 months ago. I could barely walk, and I was walking with a big limp. He was a mess. He took his first step toward the tour Sunday. It may have been small, but at least it's a step. So big shout out to Chris Froome. Welcome back. You've certainly had a heck of a career, and it was a whole lot of fun watching you when you were in your heyday. And, I know that you still have a chance of coming back, and I'm sure you have an engine that not very many people have. So there's a pretty good chance that we're going to see a lot more of Chris Froome out there. But he's 34 years old, and as we know in bicycle racing terms, that we're getting on in bicycle racing when you're 34. Although we have had riders who have raced successfully up into their 40s. So, but anyway, that's where we're at. That's kind of cool. Chris Froome is back. The tour itself is, let's see, this was Wednesday. So this is stage 4 today, I believe. And there are 7 stages altogether. There's a lot of flat stages. I believe stage 6 is what they call a mountain stage. I do not know what that means, but it's apparently there's, let's see here. Let me see what a mountain looks like in the desert because you never know. So February, nope, I can't seem to find it here. Anyway, all the stages right here. So here we are. I was looking at the wrong one. So stage 4 was today. It was a sprint stage, and it was 173 kilometers. Stage 5 tomorrow is says it's a mountain stage, and it is 162 kilometers. So just to get a rough idea what this looks like, I'll take a look at and see if they have a profile on this, but it doesn't appear that they're that organized. So anyway, it is a mountain stage. I don't know what mountains are like out in the desert, but maybe somebody does. No idea. Anyway, that is the big tour in the desert that's happening right now, which is kind of cool, kind of a neat thing. And of course, it's stage 7 is like the flat sprint finish in 100. This is definitely a sprint stage also. And that will be your last one. So that's going to finish up this week, and it's kind of cool. Different thing. I thought I'd bring it up because it's happening at the moment, so it's kind of a neat thing. The other thing that is happening really, really soon, and this is coming up next month, March 15th through the 17th in Arlington, Virginia, we have the annual National Bike Summit, the 21st Annual National Bike Summit. So I just, if you want to know what this is about, you can still sign up for this thing. You can still go. It is in Arlington/Washington, D.C., so it kind of bounces back and forth. But there are some kind of interesting things in here. There's a lot of interesting speakers. The first day is Saturday, March 14th. And, of course, they have a big ride that you can go on. And that's kind of the start of it. And, of course, in the evening there's a league rally, an annual membership meeting for the League of American Bicyclists. And then they get into some great stuff here. There's some women's clinics there. There's micro-mobility and bike share as public transit. Speaker by the name of Dave Schneider. Safer streets, better commutes, stronger advocacy, three ways data can support active transportation planning. And so there's a number of people involved with that one. It's like 4 different people involved there. Want to get more women cycling? Learn how to design, plan, and execute a successful women's bike festival. And that is presented by 4 different women, which is kind of cool. And gosh, there's just tons of stuff all at the same time. So you have a choice of many, many things that you can see when you're down there, and you probably have to be, you know, selective about what you want to do because a lot of the stuff overlaps. One of them, which I would love to go to, which is, it says it's limited, the mobile workshop, Becoming a Captain, tandem training with blind bicyclists. That would be fascinating to go to. I would love to do that. So this league is partnering with Bike Arlington and the Metropolitan Washington Association of Blind Athletes for the National Bike Summit to train sighted bicyclists how to ride tandem bikes with the blind bicyclists. Summit attendees are invited to learn a valuable skill and observe how MWABA trains new captains to join their weekly rides weekly rides in Washington, D.C. for blind. That's cool. That is so cool. I just think that's just a wonderful thing. So about MWABA, the Metro Washington Association of Blind Athletes, is an organization of blind athletes and their sighted peers who believe that recreation and competitive sports opportunities should be open to everyone, regardless of their ability to see. They hold programs for blind and visually impaired youth and adults from Washington, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia to discover new sports or practice familiar ones in open and welcoming environment. The mission also includes teaching blind athletes the physical techniques and body movements that they may not have had a chance to learn through their physical education classes. And they also share the best way to teach athletic and kinesthetic skills to blind and visually impaired population educators. Pretty cool stuff. So anyway, they are that's a really cool workshop. I would love to go to something like that. That sounds like a great thing. Other things like turning ideas into projects that will get built to be effective when working with engineers and planners. Yeah, I'd like to go to that one too. There's just all sorts of really, really cool stuff here. Because I have a little working with engineering project thing going on here right now, which is cool. There's another one called the Idaho Stop. It's not just for Idaho anymore. And we know about the Idaho Stop. That's a good thing. I want to see that really expanded. I'm hoping. I know Bike Walk Connecticut has brought it into conversation. I think that they're trying to work on that. It makes so much sense. And it also puts more people on bicycles because, you know, if you can roll through an intersection without having to stop, you're going to get there faster. And that's kind of a cool thing. And you find yourself transporting yourself on more of an advantage, a luxury item than you do sitting in your car and waiting for that light to change. There's just all sorts of cool stuff there. And so if you do get a chance, you can still sign up. You go to the League of American Bicyclists and they have a sign up program there. It's so many days of things to check out, making Uber a bicycle company. That's very funny. So lots of things, five things cities must do to ensure complete streets. There's just so much cool stuff out there. So anyway, if you get a chance and you have the time to go to it, I've always thought it would be a cool thing to check out. So anyway, the agenda for the 2020 National Bike Summit, pretty cool stuff. And there's just pages and pages here of information on it. So anyway, maybe you want to consider that. That's kind of a cool thing. More things within the industry. Outer Bike is a so Outer Bike is basically an outdoor bicycle festival and information center, and it's pretty much it's a demo event, and it's in its 10th year in the United States, and it was always associated with particular bike shows like, you know, Interbike, that sort of thing. That's why it's called Outer Bike. And it's adding four new experimental event destinations for try to buy in seven iconic riding locations in 2020. New venues bridge core qualified consumers to more specialty brands and retailers nationwide. It seems that the schedule here, the goal when Outer Bike was founded 10 years ago was to create a consumer experience that melded incredible brands and products with best-in-class riding destinations, says Outer Bike CEO Ken Meidel. Our goal is still centered on hosting and serving qualified consumers to a completely unique on-dirt shopping experience, and our additional venues increase accessibility for more riders to find their ideal bike when connecting directly with and more deeply with the brands they're considering. The dates for the 2020 Outer Bike events are Deer Valley, Utah, June 19th through the 21st. Killington, Vermont, July 24th through the 26th. That would be local for us, even though it's a few states away. It's still probably the closest one that we would have that we could go to here up in the Northeast. Crested Butte, Colorado, August 14th through the 16th. Duluth, Minnesota, in August 28th through the 30th. South Lake Tahoe, September 18th through the 20th. Moab, Utah, October 2nd through the 4th. And Bentonville, Arizona. Really? What's in Bentonville? That's weird.
Walmart.
Walmart's in Bentonville. So we're going to do
Did you say Bentonville, Arizona or Alabama?
Yeah. No, Arizona. Bentonville, Arizona.
No, that's Arkansas.
It's Arkansas. I'm sorry. It's Bentonville, Arkansas. Walmart's there. Well, they must have quite an off-road riding area around there because that's where one of these are. And these are all destinations for people to go to interesting places like Crested Butte. That's a big, you know, checklist item if you're a mountain biker. You got to go to Crested Butte. That's definitely a cool place. So anyway, It's kind of a cool thing if you're thinking about buying a new bike and you're looking for the latest and the greatest. Outer bike events are definitely a cool thing to do. It's not just about being able to demo different bikes. There's a communal vibe. Everyone is there to ride, which makes for a truly unique three-day destination event. But the sheer range of bikes that this person was able to demo would cost, for what it would cost to demo it, his local bike shop definitely made him feel like a kid in the candy store. So you can find out more about that if you go to www.outerbike.com, and they'll give you a little bit more idea of what it is that they're doing. So pretty cool stuff if you're interested in checking out some cool new mountain bikes. We used to have something back here known as the Pedro Festival, which was a pretty cool thing. And it is now turned into, I believe that the Mountain Bike Festival has turned into, they go to the Kingdom Trails up in northern Vermont, which is, by the way, if you are from New England and you haven't discovered that yet, it's a pretty cool place. If you are from outside of New England and you're looking for a place to go, for a destination mountain bike place to go, Kingdom Trails rocks. It's amazing what the vast trail network that's up there. It's really, really well done and well maintained. They are always working on it. So the Kingdom Trails are really, really cool. But you do have to go to all the way up there, Vermont. It's quite a ways up. It's up by Burke Mountain, if you know that area at all. It's quite a ways up, close to the Canadian line. So it's quite a ways up. But anyway, this is another one that kind of crossed over, which I found interesting. This was on the opinion page in Bicycle Retailer, and it is a note from Learn from Holland. 20 mile per hour assist is too fast for e-bikes. So this will bring up some chatter, I'm sure. So, And I kind of understand what they're talking about, because when you go to a place like Holland where everybody rides a bike, 20 miles an hour is pretty fast, especially if you're in lots of traffic, because they actually have bicycle traffic there. They actually have so many people riding on bicycles that they have to enforce the law around, you know, traffic safety with bicycles. Kind of fascinating. To me, it's like a dream come true, but anyway, this is an article by Theo Jorna, and he is the founder and CEO of HICLE, H-I-C-L-E, which organizes some of the largest consumer bike fairs in the world, held in Belgium and the Netherlands. HICLE also organizes E-Bike Challenge Minneapolis, which will be held at the Minneapolis Convention Center March 28th through 29th. Interesting. Jorna has been in the bike industry since the 70s. Oh, like me. So an order was issued last August that opens the U.S. Bureau of Land Management trails for the Class 1 electric bikes. These bicycles have motors and provide assistance up to 20 miles per hour. At first glance, this appears to be a positive step forward for the still juvenile e-bike industry. The use of electric assist bicycles provides a possibility for less athletic people to go out on public lands, stimulating growth for both the e-bike industry and recreational organizations. Yet, the reasoning may be a little flawed. The use of e-bikes for commuting and recreational use has been well established throughout Western Europe. The Netherlands is the front runner of the worldwide e-bike industry. In 2018, 40% of the total bicycles sold there were e-bikes. Wow. This number increased the next year to 50% of bicycle sales, and more than 500,000 e-bikes were sold and a 70% market share by revenue. Even though the market has been significant for the past few years, it still shows a tremendous growth rates, conveying a worldwide example of the opportunities shown in the e-bike market. That is amazing. That's e-bikes are a big deal. They are definitely something we need to pay attention to. Think about the difference between 20 people driving automobiles or trucks, cars and trucks, and 20 people riding bicycles. Can you say traffic jam? I mean, every time you're sitting in traffic, every time you're stuck on the highway or you're trying to get to work in the morning and you're sitting there and you're going nowhere, remember, if you're on an e-bike, you could be going up to 20 miles an hour and you wouldn't have anything stopping you, which is kind of cool. So it just makes more sense. Plus the amount of congestion that you get when you put six cars side by side with one another in one place, and look how much space it takes versus putting six bicycles side by side with one another. Big, big difference. So anyway, again, I will continue to promote e-bikes. I do not own an e-bike, by the way. I just think that the timing is right, and I think it's a really good thing, and I know a number of people who do own them, and I think that we could really do some good things here in the U.S. with e-bikes. So I'd like to see more interest in this and finding places where you could ride them safer and putting lanes in and all that for e-bikes. I think it'd be an awesome thing. I mean, 20 miles an hour is not bad. It's not bad, especially when you're sitting in traffic at 0 miles an hour. So, you know, this is the whole point here is learn from Holland. They think 20 miles per hour is a little too fast, but they also have, just so you know, they also have a lot more cycling congestion over there than we have here. Whereas here, it's really not as big of a deal. So, anyway, the e-bike speeds of 20 miles per hour federal lands will forbid their use on trails. Cities consider the use is too dangerous and the market will reach a dead end. I don't agree with this. To realize the potential growth of e-bikes in the United States, there's a need to rebrand away from the daredevil image towards e-bike as a household essential. The American e-bike market needs to redirect itself by looking at the European market and learning from it. 20 is too fast. That's an opinion. What do you think? Do you think 20 miles an hour is too fast for an e-bike to be used for everyday use? Make a note, join in on my Facebook page, and let me know what you think, or send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. Love to hear your opinion on e-bikes and what is too fast. And do you think that they are going to be something we should be looking at in the future? Okay, I'm getting down here on the wire. I found something else which I thought was very interesting because it is somewhat local. And our old friend Ben Serrata is relaunching his bike brand. And for any of you who are listening to me right now and have been around as long as I have on the planet and have ridden bicycles for a long time, you know the name Serrata. You know all about Serrata Bicycles. They were an upstate New York company originally founded by Ben Serrata, who had lots of connections to all the old builders, the Peter Weigels, the Richard Sachs, the back all the way back in the days of Whitcomb USA and all the other fine bicycles that came out of the East Coast. So anyway, Ben is, he has, that brand has come and gone a few times. It got bought out and then it went bankrupt and it just had all sorts of things that went on. It's an iconic brand. He made some awesome bicycles, really nice old steel road bicycles. In the coming months, Cerada's refocus is going to be on building metal bikes in steel, aluminum, and titanium offerings. Steel and aluminum models will be available in March, with titanium beginning in the early summer. He says, we expect to introduce additional products every 6 months or so after that. It's hard to imagine a future product line that does not include an e-bike option. Whether that is purely in the road range or well outside of it is to be determined. And the focus will be on three road designs: Duetti, mostly pavement, Modomio, which is going to be a pavement, dirt, gravel, and the Scapero, mostly dirt and gravel and trail. Each will they're be available in three different price groups, mainly by the frame material. And these are definitely luxury items. Their prices start pretty high and get a lot higher. So anyway, but that was kind of a thing. Cerada was founded back in 1972, and the company had been through several iterations. In 2012, Cerada announced it had partnered with financial services group Bradway Capital. The next year, it joined Divine Cycling Group, an investment group formed in 2012. DCG later went bankrupt. So anyway, Ben's been up and down and all around, as has some of the others too. I know Chris Chance is on that list too, my old buddy Chris. And Ben Cerada's back. Just so if you are a Ben Cerada fan, then that is really cool. Next week, I will try to fit in a little bit more about what is going on with the coronavirus and cycling. Yeah, it's a big deal. It's on the pro race circuit, and it is definitely causing some problems. So anyway, from this point on, we will move forward to the events section really quick. I already mentioned the Bike Summit, National Bike Summit. There's also, just to bring it up, National Bike Month is May of 2019. There's here in Connecticut, we have Bike to School Day, May 8th, Bike to Work Week, May 13th through the 17th, Bike to Work Day on May 17th. I'll have more information on that in the future. Also, the 9th annual Thread City Cyclers Century Ride on July 26, 2020. Come explore the roads that Pedal and Ron and Fran ride on. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. My name is Pedal and Ron. You've been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you've been listening to this live or on podcast and you'd like to comment, send me an email, bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, or now on Spotify. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, or better yet, be on the show as a guest, please send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Pedal and Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS, Storrs.